Hey, I'm stand-up comedian Ophira Eisenberg, and I am mom to a very spirited 9-year-old and host of Parenting is a Joke. Each week, I talk to comedians and celebrities about what it's like to raise kids while keeping your career afloat. There is no parenting advice here, okay? Just hilarious stories from the chaos of everyday life, from school drop-offs to airport meltdowns and everything in between. We're all figuring it out. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Subscribe to Parenting is a Joke wherever you get your podcasts.
From the podcast that brought you to each of the last lesbian bars in the country and back in time through the sapphic history that shaped them, comes a brand new season of Cruising Beyond the Bars. This is your host, Sarah Gabrielli, and I've spent the past year interviewing history-making lesbians and queer folks about all kinds of queer spaces, from bookstores to farms to line dancing and much more.
For 11 years, every night women slept illegally on the common.
We would move down to the West Indies to form a lesbian nation.
Meg Kristen coined the phrase women's music, but she would have liked to say it was lesbian music.
And that's kind of the origins of the Combahoover Collective.
You can listen to Cruising on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes air every other Tuesday starting February 4th.
This episode and the entire year's worth of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Make those babies and come tell me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
At the time, they had worked with, 70 primarily straight men. I was one of the first out gay guys,
right?
Who had a significant other who was a woman, and they wanted to get pregnant. And so they had 70 something babies who were born to HIV positive dads and HIV negative moms, who and the babies were all HIV negative. And so they realize that, you know, if you're healthy, you're on antiretrovirals, and you don't have any viral loads, that the semen doesn't actually have any either. And they can separate it and make sure that you're – so that's how we worked. And I was – like I said, I think we were the 90th baby.
Wow.
Today they've had hundreds.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast Pride Extravaganza. Yes, y'all, it is Pride Extravaganza. Extravaganza, I don't know why I said it like that. It is Pride Extravaganza for the third year in a row. What's Pride Extravaganza, you ask? For the entire month of June, our beautiful Pride month, the Queer Family Podcast is bringing you double the episodes of Queer Family Goodness, which means instead of just one episode per week, you are getting two gorgeous episodes, one on Monday and one on Thursday, so that we can really inundate ourselves and our senses with all the beauty that comes from the LGBTQIA community and LGBTQIA family building and LGBTQIA parenting. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a great month. I have so many wonderful episodes lined up for you, including this one, which is with Brian Rosenberg, who is the founder of Gays with Kids, a wonderful resource for LGBTQIA families. And most recently, he is the founder of GWK Academy, Gays with Kids Academy, which is a free resource for anyone and everyone in the LGBTQIA community who is looking to build their family, who has a family. You have to go check it out. You'll hear about it in the episode. I don't want to give you too much. We go into a lot. We talk about adoption. We talk about surrogacy in this episode. We talk about an HIV/AIDS journey and family building through that. Y'all, this episode was so good. I can't wait to share it. Before I share it with you, this week, actually on June 2nd, y'all should know it's Family Equalities Day, which was started by Mombian, Dana Rudolph, lesbian blogger of the stars. Dana's been blogging about lesbian family building and queer family building for longer than many of us knew it was an option. And she founded LGBTQ Families Day, where on that day, everybody should use the hashtag LGBTQ Families, post a picture of your family, and tag LGBTQ Families so we can get the word out and spread all of our LGBTQIA family goodness out into the world. And we need it more than ever right now. Let's show the world how many of us there are and how freaking beautiful we are. So do that. I'll be sharing pictures of my family
And I would encourage you to tag me and hashtag the LGBTQ Families Day, and let's spread the word about how beautiful we all are. And also, it's Pride Month, so happy Pride. And you must know that in our family, Pride is second only to Christmas. It's a big deal in our house. We make a big deal out of it the whole month long. We love walking around and looking at all of the decorations that are all over our beautiful city starting June 1st. And we make a big deal of celebrating LGBTQIA folks because it's important and my kids love it. Who doesn't love a rainbow, right? So I am wishing you all a happy beginning of Pride, and let's celebrate, bitches, because we deserve it. All right, let's play this gorgeous episode with Brian. You're gonna love it. All right, Helen, Beulah, they're already, they got all their beads on. They're ready to go with Pride. Helen, Beulah, can you come over here and roll this tape, please? Thank you so much. All right, they're not a real assistants, y'all. I still don't have assistants, but they're gonna stay in my life forever because they just hang out on my couch, these make-believe people. All right, Helen and Beulah, come on over here and roll this tape. Happy Pride, y'all. Let's go. Let's celebrate. We deserve this shiz. Okay.
Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Brian.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. I've been really excited for this interview for quite some time.
Me as well. Very, very, very much so. You know, we met the first time and I like, oh my God, I've known and loved this person my entire life.
That's how I feel too. I feel like we're like old friends. I'm not even kidding. I'm really excited for the audience, the listeners, to hear all about your amazing life, your amazing family, and your amazing resources that you have out there for all the world to use. So without further ado, Brian, we're going to do your 30-second elevator pitch.
Okay.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I'm Brian Rosenberg. My husband and I have been together for over 30 years now. We are dads to three children born through adoption and surrogacy. After becoming a dad, we founded Gays with Kids, March of 2014, to help other gay men become dads and navigate the gay and gay fatherhood. And I realized after 5 or 6 years that I wanted to do more to help people become parents. And so we launched GWK Academy, which is now its own not-for-profit entity. And our reason for being is to support family building, all paths of family building for the entire LGBTQ plus community. And I'm super psyched to be here, Jamie.
Oh my God, I love it. You did go over, Brian.
I know,
you did.
I know.
I'm not going to fault you for it because you had a lot to cover and you actually have been a resource for our community for quite some time. I've known about you ever since I started this podcast. And I know you have done amazing, amazing things for the LGBTQIA community, as I like to call us. And we're so well aligned that I can't believe it's taken us this long to collaborate together, to finally be together in this great world of ours.
Agreed, agreed. And you know, it's funny, I just looking at like, we did an Instagram post mm-hmm. with you and your beautiful family, and I saw Dana Rudolph, uh-huh. better known to the rest of the world as Mommy. And so I love it when people I know each other.
I know.
So shout out to Dana.
Shout out
love
to Dana.
Love you too. Like, how is it that we're just meeting? I've known Dana for almost, it seems like 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
I know. And Dana is like the OG of the LGBTQIA family building living.
Yeah, she is.
She is OG. Like, she's been at this forever.
Yes.
You know? And it's so good that we're in just such good, great, wonderful, beautiful company. I love it so much.
Great.
So, Brian, let's take it back a bit, shall we?
Okay.
Can we take it back to, let's go to your coming out, like in a nutshell. Let's go to like when Brian discovered who Brian truly is.
Oh, so those are two different stories. Uh-oh. When Brian discovered who Brian truly was back when I was in high school, college. But we're talking about the 70s, 80s. Life was very different then. And so I just completely tried to shut it out. I finally came out. I was with my girlfriend and it was
of course you
on
were.
My birthday. Of course I was. And shout out to Pammy, who's still a very good friend of mine to this day.
Of course she is.
Right. And sorry, don't make me laugh. And so I came out, we went out to dinner with my family. And after dinner, I brought Pammy back to my family, my parents' house. And they thought I was going to say that we were engaged, but instead I told them I was gay. So interesting story about Brian Rosenberg's coming out. I've been HIV positive. Well, I know I got it during my very first sexual encounter with a man, and that was in 1988, found out in 1990. I started dating Pammy in 1990. She knew I was HIV positive, and then I slowly but surely told my family that I was HIV positive. And this is around when Magic Johnson came out.
Scary time. This was like a death sentence.
This was absolutely a death sentence, but I wasn't the only hetero who was coming out with HIV. So when I told people, like only one person asked how I got it, and I made some cockamamie story up that had to do with a woman in a sex toy.
Oh my God.
And everyone like is just, okay, sure. That's what he says. So So I'm the only person I know, and I've talked to thousands of people about this. I've never met someone else who came out about being HIV positive before they came out about being gay. That's how much internalized homophobia I have. But that could be a whole episode into itself.
That is a whole thing to unpack, Brian. That is deep. Oh my God. And how scary and awful for you to you went and had an encounter, but you're not out yet. But, you know, we cannot deny our true natures. So, right. And then obviously, it's so messed up. This is why representation matters so much.
Yes.
And this is why acceptance matters so much. Yes. Because you might not have had that experience with that person had you been able to just authentically be yourself and live your true self and learn about how to protect yourself and learn about how to be safe with it.
Gets worse, Jamie. Uh-huh. So, So I remember with this gentleman who I met at a bar in Florida. I knew this was gay bar. It was called Kevin's Cabaret. What a cabaret was, I had no idea. I walked in, the bartenders saw me, knew me. You know, I was 24, 23. Got me totally drunk, went home with one of the bartenders, and then it was his roommate that I hooked up with.
Oh, as you do. Yeah.
as one is wont to do. and I remember we're about to have sex, penetrative sex. Mm-hmm. And I said, shouldn't we use a condom or something? And he's like, why? Do I look sick? And I said, no. And he said, well, are you sick? I said, no, of course not. I'm not even gay.
Right.
And so he said, then we don't need it. Oh. And that's how that conversation went.
Oh my God, this is such a lesson. Have you told your kids this lesson?
Actually, when I finally did come out, I joined the AIDS Action Committee Speakers Bureau, and I went to high schools and colleges. God. And the first college I went to was my alma mater, and I told Pammy and all my good friends came and joined me. Oh. And I spoke to current class. So I was out of school at this point, 8 years, and I still knew some of the deans. And so I called them up and said, I'd like to come and share my story. And they're like, oh my God, yes, please come.
What you did was such important work. Now I was first of all, oh my God, Brian, I can only imagine how scary this was. And I was in middle school. Well, I was young, and I grew up in San Francisco. I remember being in middle school and we had a really strong education on HIV/AIDS in middle school. And people like you came and spoke to us and scared the shit out of us.
if you were in Massachusetts, I would have gone to your school.
Right, exactly. But this was such pivotal education for me. I remember all of that time learning in health class vividly about HIV/AIDS and how scary it was, especially in San Francisco, because it was all over billboards and it was protect yourself, protect yourself, protect yourself. And it was hearing from people like you, stories like you, that really made me so insane about safe sex. And I feel like I was so insane about it, and I'm a lesbian, right? When I finally tried lesbian sex for the first time, I went to the clinic on the Fenway Clinic, the Boston Clinic. Oh my God.
Oh, the Fenway.
Yeah.
The Fenway Community Health Center, or Fenway Center, I think it's called now.
Because I went to school there. I went to the clinic and I was like, I think I need a dental dam. And the doctor was like, wow, nobody ever asked me for that. But sure, I can give you that. And I like forced the person to be like, to use dental dams. Like, that's how scared I was.
Well, but you saved yourself for also potentially exposing yourself to other stuff that you
Yeah. And because I was that girl that was like, no, not without protection.
I was a freshman in college, a freshman or a sophomore. And so this is in the 80s, mid 80s. And I went to college in Connecticut to a small liberal arts school. And there was a guy coming to speak who was living with AIDS. And my friends and I were on the way walking, like the whole campus was going. And we're like, are you gay? I'm not gay. Are you gay? Are you gay? We're not gay. So why are we going then?
Right.
So we didn't go. And honestly, had I gone, maybe I would have learned about how it all works. And then I wouldn't have.
It's crazy thinking back on that time, really thinking back on how scared everybody was. But also, I feel like nowadays, the young people today have no, like, they don't educate about this now. And I feel like, especially with the regime we're living in, I feel like we might go back a little bit to a time when, you know, people are just so miseducated about it. And kids today don't think it's a big deal, which is insane.
Well, that's the thing. They think it's not a big deal because, you know, they can just take pills or whatever. And, you know, take it from someone who's been, I was like one of those, you know, in Rent, the AZT, but that was me.
Yeah.
It's not fun. And I tell my kids, I was like, I'll do it and I can do it. But like, you want to stay healthy because it's not really fun to take a host of pills. Now I just turned 60, so I'm taking all kinds of other pills anyways. It's like, as we want to do as we get older.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not fun having to worry about, you know, your health, especially at such a young age.
No.
And young people think they're invincible, right?
Like, yep. I think we need to raise the bar again for HIV/AIDS education, because I feel like it's fallen by the wayside, just like how measles is coming back.
Oh, God, you know, I know.
It's like, no, y'all, this is really serious.
It's serious,
and you got to take it seriously. But wow, what a story. And we just got started.
You asked about my coming out, so there you go, Jamie.
I had no idea I was going to open up that can of worms, but I'm so glad I did. I'm so glad I did. So let's fast forward. Okay, so so you're living with HIV. You've come out. You're accepted. I'm assuming. I'm hoping. Or
yes,
somehow.
Yes.
Like, long road to that. But the internalized homophobia was real.
Oh yeah, it was real. But it's gone now, and I meet the guy that is going to be the love of my life and my husband and my long-term forever partner. And it's funny, I was going to a support group and I just decided, because when I realized what was going on and how HIV is transmitted and all that, I said, I would tell people before having sex. I told, to this day, there's not a single person I've had sex with without disclosing my HIV status first. And even though I'm undetectable, which means can't get it from, I can't transmit, always telling people that because I just want, I think it's something that people should know. Mm-hmm. And I told, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 people who all said, thanks for sharing that, but I don't want to have sex anymore, or mm-hmm. I don't want to date you. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, you know, I'm only going to go out with people who are HIV positive like me. And I met Bird, and I told you, one of these guys that had said, no, I'm sorry, but we're going to be friends. Unbeknownst to me, had told Ferd about me and my HIV status. And I then meet Ferd and we hang out, we go on a date, mm-hmm. and we come back to his place and we start to kiss. And I was like, I need to talk to you about something first. And here I am thinking, like, I can't believe I set myself up to be rejected yet again.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I know. I said, you don't know because I haven't told you. And I need to tell you because I'm on this crusade, I'm only going to have sex with people that I tell. And he's like, I know. And I'm like, stop arguing with me. You don't know. He's like, Brian, you're HIV positive. I'm like, oh my God, you do know. And we've been together ever since. That was almost 33 years ago. In June, it'll be 33 years.
That's amazing. And wait, was he HIV positive too?
No, he was HIV negative. And we knew of each other. He's Dutch and he had moved to Boston just a year and a half before we met. And we had been noticing each other in the gym. And he was a cutie patootie. And yes, as Fred likes to tell us, the tale as old as time, boy meets boy in the gym, especially in the locker room when they see each other for the first time, if you know what I mean. He decided that he got educated, found out how it's transmitted, and thought I was cute enough and nice enough to go on dates. And once we started to date and he got to know me, he thought, chances are this is not going to be long lasting, but I'm in it for as long as it will last, meaning until I die kind of thing. Uh-huh. Because during our first few years together, I mean, we probably went, I went to some 20 to 30 funerals of guys mostly in their 20s and 30s. I remember going to a funeral of someone who turned 40 and we're all like, oh my God, how old he lived to be. Do you think we can live to be that old?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That's, to me, that's what like the young generation has no, thank God.
Yeah.
But still like they have no idea. Clue what we went through.
I mean, we lost like so many, we lost
so many people,
so many young people. My aunt, my wife's cousin died in the 80s of AIDS. Ugh, it's terrible. Sorry, I laughed at first because I thought you were saying, he was like, I'm not going to stay with this guy for long.
No, he used to sound like the story. He's like, Brian, if we have 3 good years or 5 good years, it's worth it to me.
Wow. And then look at you, still going strong. Look at that.
Here we are. Mm,
thank you, science. Thank you, science. Yes. Oh, my
God. And luck. I mean, I know I have friends who, when the so-called AIDS cocktail came out, who took it and, you know, they're not with us anymore. I don't know why it worked for me and it didn't work for Leo or for Danny. I should say names because I was not crying.
I know, but it's nice to say their names. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Oof. That's why we got to get educated and stay safe. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Every single one of us deserve support that understands our paths to parenthood. And that's why I'm so happy that California Cryobank is the sponsor of this here show. California Cryobank, y'all, has been proudly serving the LGBTQIA community and families for decades, and they're still going strong, and they offer so many wonderful resources for LGBTQIA families, like letters for second parent adoption and so much more. They are really here to support us in all the ways we create family. If donor sperm is a part of the journey and ready to get yourself started down this path, California Cryobank has got you covered. They've got medical history, they've got baby photos, they've got donor essays, which are super important, as I say in this episode, and so much more. You're going to go to cryobank.com. You're going to use code QueerFam25, and you're going to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You don't even have to make a purchase. Just go see what they have and see if this path is right for you. It's a win-win situation. Go to cryobank.com, use code QueerFam25, and get that free level 2 subscription, y'all. Start making those babies and then come tell me about them, because you know I love a good queer family building journey. All right, let's get back to the episode. Here we go.
Love is love.
All right, so you hit it off and it keeps going. And then at some point you decide, when did having kids come into the conversation? Because for many of us, it comes in extremely early because there's so many paths to take. We have to figure it out. We have to get on the same page, you know. So how did that conversation come about?
In 1996 was when the AIDS cocktail had started for me. And my doctor was a big macha here in the Boston area. And so when we were able to start looking at how much viral load there was in the body and could see that I was undetectable, he got asked by the Boston Globe, a big newspaper, by a reporter if there were any of his patients who would be willing to share their story. And at this point, I had been going out to speak about living with HIV and being gay at schools and colleges. So he asked me if I'd be willing to talk to the reporter, and I said I was. I remember the reporter, the first thing he said to me, he said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 30 wonderful. Because I didn't think I was going to be alive at 31.
Oh my God.
And so that's when I realized it started to dawn on us that maybe I was not going to die. And it was a few years later. I always loved kids, like my nieces and nephews, my college friends' kids, people I would see walking on the street who I don't know with their little ones. I can't stop but avoid going over to them. And so I've always loved them. And after we realized that we had a life to live, to look for a future to look forward to, my husband said to me, and by now I'm like 40, and he said to me, so yes, a big gap between 31 and 40, I realized, but took a while to catch up and like readjust life, that I wasn't dying, but we were going to live. And we moved to New York City and lived in Chelsea, and that was like two kids in a candy store. Mm-hmm. And so, we have a whole bunch of years that we don't need to get into here.
Yeah. Maybe that's another podcast.
that's another podcast. So it took a while, but eventually he's like, I don't think you're ever really going to be happy as you get older if you're not a dad. Mm-hmm. And that's how we started.
Oh my God, I love that. So how did you figure out what your path were going to be? Because you took two very distinct paths.
Yes.
To become dads.
We both were like, let's just adopt. Mm-hmm. And that was just what we both wanted to do. And we were matched with a very young birth mother who was a teenager, living with a boyfriend who was a teenager, but not the dad.
Oh.
Not the biological dad of her baby. And he didn't want to be a dad.
Oh.
And we were matched with them, and we went and spent, I don't know, 3 hours with them, during which I held onto this baby who was like 3 months old for the entire time. Like as soon as we sat down, I don't know if I asked, she probably said, would you like to hold him? I said, yes. And that was it. And she kept saying, oh, he's so comfortable with you. You guys are the dads. That's it. Then she really didn't want to give up her baby. So she, after about 4 months, where we went back and forth and we got her a social worker and lawyers and spent money, she just went MIA. She took off with her baby. She left her boyfriend, got rid of the cell phone. So we were no longer able to get a hold of her. The adoption agency wasn't able to get a hold of her. And that's when we said, I guess adoption is not going to be the way for us to create our family.
That is heartbreaking. That is so hard.
It's heartbreaking, but it was the birth mother's right to do that, right?
Yes, 100%.
She didn't owe us anything. But yes, it was very sad, especially because I got to hold this baby. Mm-hmm. But she also had some weird caveat. Like, she didn't want it to happen right away. She wanted to be able to take him to his six-month visit. Oh. And she scheduled it a month late. So, like, there were definitely red flags, and my adoption agency even told me those were red flags. But Jamie, I got to hold him, mm-hmm. and I held him for like almost 3 hours. So I told you how I was with babies and little ones. I just couldn't forget him.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I hope that mom and son are well. He'd be 17 years old at this point. And so we decided that we would become dads through surrogacy. Mm-hmm. And so I just assumed it would be my husband's genes. He assumed it would be mine, even though I'm HIV positive and he's HIV negative. He figured out how we could do it with my stats. And so our plan was we'll try one of each. Turns out his little guys didn't swim, or they didn't swim properly or something. Right. But he would have had to have a procedure. And we're like, well, we're not getting any younger, no procedure. And so we went forward with me. And so we signed a contract with our surrogacy agency. An IVF clinic. We left a huge deposit that was not refundable.
It's a huge deposit, yeah.
A huge deposit. And 3 days later, we got a call from our adoption agency. And that's Levi.
Of course you did. Of course, right? Of course. And you already did the deposit. So you're already in it.
So we're already in it. And so, but you know, burn the bushes worth two and whatever that saying is. So when we found out about Levi and we went and met, he was 3 days old. We had to give the adoption agency a response the next day. We found out that he was healthy. We picked him up the day later.
Wow.
And this so was, brought him home.
And was this an open adoption?
It was not. So the story is that his birth mom was also in high school and had a daughter with her high school boyfriend who was not supporting the family at all. And they stopped going out, but he came to visit her on the daughter's first birthday and brought the daughter a pair of sneakers and got the mom pregnant again. And when she told her parents, who were supporting her and her baby daughter, that she was pregnant again, they're like, we can't. So she just sort of pretended like she wasn't pregnant. And then she went to the hospital and said she wasn't feeling well. And it turned out her water had broken, and that's why she wasn't feeling well. And she gave birth. And thank God for us, a doctor there worked with our adoption agency for his own family building and said to Levi's birth mom, are you going to keep this baby? She said, no. Does the birth dad want? No. Do you know anyone at all who's going to keep? No. Then the baby's going to go into the foster care system, and you really don't want that to happen. And he explained why and what that would be like for the baby. And she agreed to meet with his adoption agency that he used to adopt his child. And that was my adoption agency. And they called us up, and that's how we got Levi's.
Oh my God, what a story. Oh,
so,
and how hard for her. How hard for her.
You know, in New York, when you adopt, the birth mom has 30 days to change her mind. And we knew that we saw one picture. It's of the birth mom, her daughter, and her mother. And the daughter is adorable. It's the spitting image of our son. And so we know, and we were told like that she's a wonderful mother to this girl. So she didn't want to give up the baby. And so she just, in her mind, I think it was easier for her to just tell the adoption agency, find a wonderful family for our son. But I can't know that I'm losing this child that I had. And so that's why it was a closed adoption. But we were so concerned that she was going to change her mind that we had to send pictures and write letters of, like, for the first days and weeks and months of his progress. And after like our first grouping of letters and pictures, the adoption agency called us and said, are you guys not happy? And they're like, I'm like, what do you mean we're not happy? She says, well, the pictures look, you know, blasé, and what you're writing is certainly sounding blasé. And I said, to be honest with you, we did that on purpose because we didn't want the birth mom to realize what an amazing baby this was and how much we loved him, because we didn't want to put our hearts on the line if she would have changed her mind. And they laughed, and she said, no, please take pictures that show this and write this out and explain it. And thankfully for us, she did not change her mind. And someday Levi will likely connect with his full sister and birth mom.
Oh, okay. It's like such an emotional roller coaster. You're taking me on so many emotions right now. I'm like up and down. Okay, so now you have Levi, beautiful baby boy. And you also have, like, basically sperm on ice, no?
Correct. Yes, we do. It was definitely on ice, especially because the way mine had to work.
Yes. How does that work? I don't know. This is a first for me, I think, in all my episodes.
Oh, wow. All right. So there's a wonderful organization called the Bedford Research Lab out of Somerville, Massachusetts. And they have a program called SPAR. Mm-hmm. Something, assisted reproduction. I forget what the S and the P stand for. But at the time, they had worked with, 70 primarily straight men. I was one of the first out gay guys.
Right.
Who had a significant other who was a woman, and they wanted to get pregnant. And so they had 70-something babies who were born to HIV-positive dads and HIV-negative moms, who in the babies were all HIV negative. And so they realized that, you know, if you're healthy, you're on antiretrovirals, and you don't have any viral loads, that the semen doesn't actually have any either. And they can separate it and make sure that you're – so that's how we worked. And I was, like I said, I think we were the 90th baby.
Wow.
Today they've had hundreds. So that's how we went through it. And it was funny because they've since moved into a beautiful facility, I understand. But when I went, it was this dingy, dungeony, gross kind of, you know, a research lab space. And they gave me a thing, which I wasn't even expecting to happen. I said, all right, go in the bathroom. And, you know, you see like no porn, no magazines. It was this dingy bathroom. And I'm like, oh my God, this is how I'm making my kids. And I'm certain that's where I had to give two other samples over the course of a month, but I'm certain Sadie and Ella came from that very first sample of the bathroom. And I tell people, it was like, it was a little toilet in a sink, and I don't know, I closed my eyes and pretended.
I see this all the time. Most of our baby making journeys, there's no romance involved. Like, it's not it's not romantic. It's scientific. It's full of all kinds of people that are not just us. You know, like, it's these baby making journeys are not the most romantic ones. That's for sure. There's a lot of love involved and a lot of attention.
A lot of love, but at least like a video or a magazine or something. I was standing up like over the sink.
Oh, God. Oh, God. What a great memory. That goes right in the memory book. Yeah. So you had this cutting edge technology. You're a part of it. And you found a surrogate. How did you find your surrogate and your egg donor? And because this was how many years ago?
So the girls are 14 and a half. So it was like 16 years ago.
Yeah.
There were a few surrogacy agencies and IVF clinics even talking to people living with HIV. But I was in Boston, and lucky for me, an IVF clinic and a surrogacy agency here were comfortable with that. The doctor was not gay. The surrogacy agency was owned at the time by a gay dad. Mm-hmm. An early advocate for surrogacy with the LGBTQ+ community. And so we went through them, and Dr. Ann Kiesling at Bedford Research Lab insisted that she speak with the surrogate who lived in West Virginia. And she and her husband were this wonderful, wonderful couple. We're in touch a little bit on Facebook. We found the egg donor also through our surrogacy agency. We were looking for a woman of color as our egg donor because we'd wanted the baby to look at least somewhat like Levi,
right,
who is black. I should have said that he's black. But we couldn't find, back at that time, the egg donor database. The volunteers were, you know, the only white women were even asked to,
right, yeah,
be egg donors, yeah, then. We went with this woman that we really loved her profile. Fern and I both took a look and fell in love with her profile. We went and met her at the IVF clinic when she was getting her reviewed by the doctor. We brought, no, it was before that. She was just getting tested even. We brought Levi with us, who was, you know, a month or two old. We meet her. We sit down, and the first thing she says is, "Can I hold Levi?" And she was so cool to him, and he started crying, and she was totally comfortable.
Aww.
And we just fell in love with her. And there was, back then, this is interesting. So back then there was no like talking about being an open donor or a known donor. Right. It just
was what it was. Yeah.
But our egg donor said that she would be open to meeting our child at some point.
Oh, cool.
So fast forward 14 years, our girls were 13, so it was a year ago. And before they went to summer camp, they had started asking for over the last year and a half prior to that, they'd been asking more and more questions about, you know, their genetics and stuff that clearly wasn't me or from my family.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Would you like to speak with our egg donor?" And they're like, "Yeah, let's do that." So I reached out. We've not been in touch with her much. I reached out through social media, and she said she'd be happy to have a video chat. She now lives in California. Mm-hmm. And so I had the girls write up a series of questions that they wanted to ask her so we'd be prepared. We got in the video call with her. It was the first time that Ferd and I had seen her since seeing her at the IVF clinic all those years ago. We cried the whole conversation.
Oh.
She was so awesome. And so incredibly sweet and nice. She never had kids of her own, didn't want to have children. She's married. And an important lesson that I tell people I speak to for GWK Academy is that it turns out that Ella and she have a lot of genetic traits in common, but Sadie, not at all. However, Sadie looks like and she has a lot of genetic traits with our donor's sister. And she even sent us pictures. We're like, "Oh my God, that. As her sister's a baby," it's like, "That's Sadie." So I tell you, when you choose your egg donor, mm-hmm. You shouldn't just be looking at her. It's the genetics from her, her family, her relatives, her grandparents, her parents, because you just don't know which genetics are going to come through.
You're not the first person to say this to me. Dr. Mark Landeris.
Oh, that's Dr. Al's big thing to
say.
Yeah,
he said that when I interviewed, and Lisa. I call her Lisa the therapist because she gives me so much great advice. Yeah, they said you and I, like, I looked at the family. We found out, like, after both our kids were born, we used the same donor for both. We were showing our daughter, she was asking, so we were showing the folder with the stuff about the donor and the pictures. And then we're looking at it and we saw, oh, twin, he's a twin. Totally spaced our, we had no idea this. And we were like hell bent on not having twins. We were so afraid to have twins, which is funny. And we probably should have like taken that into account that he was an actual twin.
Twin, so. Yeah.
And rightfully so, as a dad of twins, twins are, when they're newborns and babies, oh, scary. But yeah. The other thing that Dr. Leon Dyrus or Dr. L says is, first of all, not only you have to look at the genetics of her entire family, plus you have to remember, whatever you're choosing her for, whatever genetics you're choosing for, your genetics are going to screw that up.
Yeah.
So you have no idea what you're going to get.
It's so true. It's so true. They come out what they come out. Those little humans, they're going to come out the little humans they are.
Correct.
You can't really. And we get crazy about these donor searches. I call it the search for the superhuman because I got crazy. I took people off the list because they had acne when they were teenagers. Like, but we can't have that. Like, who doesn't have
that? I could not have been. I got zits every year on my nose from the time I was in fifth grade.
Yeah.
Till now.
I would have never chosen you, Brian. And then fast forward, my daughter's 11 now and she gets little pimples. So it didn't work. I mean, she gets little marks and she obsesses over them, you know, because she's 11. But
yes.
Yeah, we get crazy. The search for the superhuman, it's real. It's real.
I tell people when it comes, obviously they have to be healthy. And like, you know, if you both have dark hair and you want the baby to look like the both, I get it. You'll want to go for a donor who has dark hair. But really, the best thing to do is ideally a known donor. And whether you're talking about a man or a woman, right? A known donor, because you want to be able to have that conversation that we have with our girls 13 right. years later. And what we told our girls until we met our donor was, when we met her, it was as if she was part of our family.
Mm.
And we just got along so well that if we had met her under different circumstances, we could see being close with her. That's why we chose her.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of story you want to tell someone. Not, she was a saxophonist and she was getting her MBA and a PhD and her father was 6'5" and her brother plays basketball. Like, you know.
And they don't have cancer in their line. Like the kids.
Right.
Yeah. But for us, because we couldn't meet, you know, sperm donors is different.
Yeah, I know. Which is ridiculous.
But when you say known donor, you mean like open donor.
Yeah.
Because we can do known donors too, which is also awesome and amazing. But if you don't want to do a known donor, totally get that. I didn't want to do it. Well, actually, we thought about it. But anyway, that's besides the point. But what we tell our kids all the time, because they had essays. So we had an essay from him and we had a voice recording. And it was really the essay that did it for us. It was like we got a sense of who he was from his essay. And so we give it to the kids and we say, this is really why, you know. Besides all the other stuff.
And you got to hear his voice too?
Yeah, I feel like we paid the extra money for the voice recording, but I don't know where it is now.
So like it was a sexy deep voice? Like
no. I don't. I can't remember. Maybe we didn't buy it.
Or did it sound like me?
Yeah, it sounded just like you.
No, because I had to sit, so you
were. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have gone for you. I'm just kidding. But I don't remember the voice recording. It was really the essay. And I spoke to a couple who said that they ruled someone out because of their voice recording. Because she was like, oh, the voice. I couldn't stand his voice.
I get. I have to say that I can get. There are some awful voices, right?
There sure are. I've been told I have an awful voice because I put my voice on recording all the time. So people will say the darndest things. Trolls are trolls and they're going to come out and say all kinds of stuff. But that's fine. It is funny how these donor searches go. And that's why, segueing here, that is why it is so important to have resources like this podcast where we air this stuff out and we talk about it. And your stuff, Gays with Kids, and now GWK Academy. So let's go into that because you're so important. And what you have given to the LGBTQI community is really, Brian, so big and important. So let's talk about it. And let's talk about the new things that are coming up and stuff.
So we launched Gays with Kids a few after we became dads, we realized, so Levi is going to be 16 in a couple of weeks.
Crazy.
And he's going to get his driver's permit. He's also going for his license, his pilot's license.
Oh my God, so, even scarier.
Yeah,
okay.
I know. Okay. So it's a whole other thing. But I realized a couple of things. One is that while we had the same concerns of any parent of a newborn, there were some that were unique to us, right? Like wherever we went, it felt like, and I'm sure it's not quite the same then as it, 16 years ago as it is now, but like we were constantly explaining our story and constantly answering like questions that are completely inappropriate, right? Like, how much did he cost?
Yeah.
Do you love your biological children more? Like all kinds of crazy, crazy, stupid things. Oh, and we're the mom's night out, all that stuff. So yeah, I want to be able to connect with other gay, not only dads, but gay dads. But there were none around, and there was nothing to connect with. So I launched Gays with Kids. I convinced my husband we should do this. And that was in March of 2014, March 21st to be exact. And I know the date because my birthday is March 20th, and that's what we're supposed to launch. But the website gods were not having our website didn't actually propagate until March 21st. And our goal was to help others navigate fatherhood. I was concerned, especially for people living with HIV. Mm-hmm. And then sort of once you became dad, navigate the gay and gay fatherhood. And the way I went about doing it was by telling stories. And over the years, we've told hundreds and hundreds and now well into the thousands of stories, mostly anecdotally from the standpoint of the dad. So it'd be like, meet Brian and Ferd. They first met June 20th, 1993, but Brian was living with HIV at the time, and so they didn't plan for a future. Fast forward today, they have three kids through adoption and surrogacy, teenagers, and they can't believe how their lives have changed and how lucky they are. Stories that made people's hearts go pitter-patter, but, and I'm a slow learner sometimes, Jamie, it took me a while to realize nothing you could take to the bank. So I inspired people.
Yeah.
And I know I helped change hearts and minds because people told me, but I inspired people, but they'd be like, okay, so now I want to become a dad. What do I do?
Right.
And so it took a while and I finally like, oh, you know what? We could tell you what to do because I, over the years, have become sort of very knowledgeable about all paths to parenthood for gay men. So whether it's surrogacy and IVF, which I've gone through personally, adopting a newborn with an infant, a newborn in America with an agency, which I've gone through personally, or foster care. And so we created GWK Academy, and I offer coaching and courses and access to mentors, dads who've gone through the same path you're about to undertake, but much more recently than me, and vetted family building partners. And then, and that was about 4 or 5 years ago. And then I just had a very, very, very big birthday, as I said, in March. And last year I started to think about that and looking at the how things have changed politically. Mm-hmm. And I started to think, as much as I love helping gay men, there's no similar resource for the rest of the LGBTQ+ community. Mm-hmm. And so we did two things. We said, let's spin out GWK Academy as its own entity. And we made it into a nonprofit, just waiting for the IRS to confirm our application. Mm-hmm. And let's support all paths for family building for all LGBTQ+ people. And that's where we are today. So I'm super stoked.
And now we're together. We're collaborating. Like it's beautiful, and we're so parallel because my journey is so similar to yours in so many ways. Because I formed this podcast because I couldn't find any stories like mine out there, and I was lonely, and it took me forever to get pregnant, and I needed to hear more stories because that's cathartic for me. So it started though, knowing with my previous co-host Robin, knowing that we at least had enough lesbian friends for one season, right? And I was only thinking about other lesbians, other moms, right? The first season is like all moms and like one gay guy, I think. And then it spun out of control because people want to hear the stories, right? And then with the change in the political climate and my co-host leaving the show and seeing how, the world was changing, I decided I needed to rebrand and change the name of the show to make it more inclusive of all of us and really started working on bringing more stories of all the different paths and all the different, all of our beautiful identities that we have in this beautiful community. So we're so similar. And so it's just like kismet that we're joining forces and really trying to help bridge the gap here, because we're still not in mainstream media. We're still not out there enough.
And as far as I can say, you know, there can't be enough people sharing their stories.
Agreed.
And whether it's a one-time social media post or they become influencers, podcasts, in their local rag, et cetera, the more the merrier, because representation going all the way back, it just so matters. And it matters just as much today as it did when I was a kid.
It really does. It really does. And I'm so happy you're out there in the world making this positive change. So what can folks who go to GWK Academy, what can they hope to find? What will they see there? And, you know, how can you help? Just throw it all out there so everybody knows.
Thank you. So first of all, GWK Academy is completely free. It is very, no matter which path to parent you're going to go for, it's going to be expensive.
Yes.
And the last thing we wanted to do was to put another financial burden on people by charging this. So it's completely free for everybody.
I love that.
So that's the first thing you'll see. So you got to join, though, to get access to everything. Mm-hmm. I believe that the most important thing, I want us to become known as the very first stop on any Legitimate, how did you pronounce
Legitimate.
Legitimate. I love the French quoi thing.
Yeah, you know, it's the QIA, the quoi.
Yeah, le quoi. You do that much sexier than me. Legitimate. I want to make sure that everybody, you are sexier than me. But anyways, I want to make sure, yes, I am gay. I want to make sure that everyone, when they're legitimate quoi, understands all their options. And I'll be honest with you, Jamie, I do, when I got into this, I found out more, I learned about the foster community and kids in the system, especially Legitimate Quoi kids in the system. And I learned how they're treated. And I do have a special place for, I really hope that when I'm done doing this and I pass the baton on to the next person, that I can look back and say, I helped move the dial a little bit to get more kids out of the system and into loving Legitimate Quoi families. The way I do that is by showing people, I want you to be the very first place people come. And I want to make sure you understand all your options. Mm-hmm. You can become a biological parent. You can become a parent through adoption. And adoption means you can adopt a newborn in the States using an agency, which I would recommend, especially if it's the first time doing it. You can adopt a newborn independently using an attorney. You can adopt from the foster care system. And lesbian and gay men can also adopt from 3.5 countries outside of the United States. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to even get into other types of foster care, like kinship care and short-term foster care, because we need those as well. And not everyone needs to be a full-time permanent parent to be able to make a difference in kids' lives.
And there are organizations you can go to that will actually, you can get paired with teenagers too. Who
Correct.
Just, you know.
You got to believe.
Yes,
my
you got to believe.
Buddies that you got to believe in New York and Vermont. It's Vermont, right? I think it's Vermont.
Yeah, because they also have a house in Vermont. So that would make sense.
Oh, that's okay. So they do. In fact, I was just talking to a guy, Michael, who I love. He met, you got to believe, through one of our social media posts, is a dad to a child through us. He just told me yesterday. And he just recently met. So you got to believe in all these other ages. They have kids with lived experience acting as advocates. So they go out and talk to organizations and people. He's adopting an advocate, a 25-year-old kid who has, since he was 12, been living on his own, basically.
Oh, wow. See, there are so many folks, not just kids, who need loving families, not necessarily even homes, like just a family, a guide to help you through this.
A safe place, someone to, because, you know, think about like being a young adult, all the stupid stuff I did. Yeah. But I had parents that I could go to, and I did go to. Got me out of the worst jams. Or like when I told my family I was HIV positive, I got big hugs. These kids, we all need families.
Yes.
At any rate, we tell stories. So we make sure you understand all your options. I want you to know before you even start how much it's going to cost, how long it's going to take, who are the different family building partners or organizations you're going to work with. Once you've chosen your path, we take you through every step you need to know.
Amazing.
And then we connect you with mentors who are just starting. If you're a mom and you're a mom only, a recent mom in the last 2 to 3 or 4 years, please, we need you as mentors to help talk to other moms-to-be. We're building out our biological family building for moms and for trans fertility pathways next. That'll all be done by the end of June, I hope. But in the meantime, we'll connect you with mentors and then access, which I think is extremely important, to vetted family building partners. So if you're looking to adopt and you're LGBTQIA, only like 1 in 4 adoption agencies is actually going to be LGBTQIA competent and passionate. So it's really important that you work with the right family. And even like biological family building, everyone will take our money today, but that doesn't mean they're all equal when it comes to supporting our family building journeys.
So true. And I talk about this with my guests all the time, all the education that we have to give to these clinics we go to, or these organizations we go to, these agencies we go to, because they slap up a gay couple on their brochure, but they really have not done the work. And
correct.
It's exhausting to have to educate people while you're going through all this.
And I don't want anyone who comes to GWK Academy to have to do that education. So I'm steering you to the organizations, and these organizations share my passion for LGBTQ+ family building. They got long, long track record, history, experience, love, etc. They're part of it, etc.
I love that. And this is a place for all of us. This is a one-stop shop for all of us to go find answers, get guidance, find resources.
And free coaching. Sorry, free coaching.
Free coaching.
So this is Marian amazing. Goodman from Pregnant Together does coaching. So I'm excited to have them as one of our coaches. Going to share that I'm going to have a new coach, a trans dad who is very famous in the community, very well known, is also going to be joining us as a coach very soon. So we have, and the coaching calls, all free.
Amazing.
I want you to be able to ask your questions, get your information, and from the smartest people. So I can talk to anyone about a gay surrogacy journey, could talk to anyone about adoption or foster care, but I don't really know my stuff about other biological family building paths for women and for trans community. So that's why I'm excited to have these other coaches joining us.
Yeah, you're doing the necessary work to make sure that everything is authentic and it's going to come from an authentic source.
Yes.
Which is
yes.
really important. I'm so glad this is out there. I always say, I think I have to stop saying this now. I'm always like, there's no guidebook for us.
There is now.
There's a guide site.
There's a guide site.
And this is so wonderful to have you on talking about it during our Pride extravaganza.
Yes, I'm very excited. So building LGBTQ families with education, support, and heart.
That's what it's all about. Oh my God. Everybody needs to go check it out. And it's not just for parents to be. It's for parents. It's for all of us.
It will be for all of us. But we want parents to come and help us and give us feedback and be mentors. We are going to start, once we finish all the other content, we're going to start getting content ready for people who are expecting. And then to help people who are bringing home the fourth trimester, or if you're bringing home a child for the first time. I want GWK Academy to be the place to come for people who are considering or are new parents. Considering parenthood or are new parents. I want to cover everything.
It's amazing. And it's really great that you've partnered with Maria, because Maria is really on it and knows their stuff.
Yes, agreed.
It is so awesome. And I'm excited to know you. I'm excited to watch this blossom and bloom. And I'm excited to be a small part of getting it out in the world. And I'm here for you if you ever want. And I think we're going to brew up some fun stuff together.
Yes, we are. We've already talked about some really cool ideas for collaboration. So I'm stoked.
Oh my God, Brian, this has been so great, and I can't wait to just stay in your orbit and root for you and cheer you on.
Thank you.
I'm really excited that you're doing all this work, because I know it's a lot of work. So keep it up.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for talking on the Pride Extravaganza.
Thanks for having me.
Queer Family Podcast.
Before we say goodbye, I just want to say one last thank you to our sponsor, California Cryobank. What you're going to want to do is use code QueerFam25 to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Let's go. Let's go. Thank you, California Cryobank.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Hey, I'm stand-up comedian Ophira Eisenberg, and I am mom to a very spirited 9-year-old and host of Parenting is a Joke. Each week, I talk to comedians and celebrities about what it's like to raise kids while keeping your career afloat. There is no parenting advice here, okay? Just hilarious stories from the chaos of everyday life, from school drop-offs to airport meltdowns and everything in between. We're all figuring it out. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Subscribe to Parenting is a Joke wherever you get your podcasts.